Episode 35.
Most of them say, what does it cost to do a brake job? But they've never called to ask, how much is your labor rate? And that's the only tool that most shop owners know to make sure that they are within the market. They find out, oh, you're charging 150 coconuts an hour. I'm going to charge 100 and I'm going to get more of your business. So they continue to undermine the industry without even realizing what they're doing.
Welcome, aftermarketers. Prepare to learn just one thing from today's episode and take action on your journey to remarkable results. A warm welcome to Jerry Kazaya of the Auto Shop in Plano, Texas. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Carm.
Are you ready to share your remarkable results?
Well, I don't know about remarkable results, but I'm happy to be here and share any information that I can with the industry.
Fabulous. Hello, aftermarketer. Carm Capriato here, and welcome to episode 35. Not sure if you knew this, but I'm up on Pinterest with my guests' photos and special pictures of their business. Also posted our pics from NACE Cars 2015, so go check them out. Find it on the social tab on the site or search Pinterest for Remarkable Results Podcast. Also become a fan of the Facebook page and get on the Twitter feeds. I really appreciate your listenership, and just as important to me is your subscription to the newsletter as I'm building an aftermarket community of Remarkable Results listeners. So you can stay in touch with the happenings at my end. Go to the homepage and become an insider. You can't miss it. And enjoy all that the site offers. I add to it every week. Thanks from the bottom of my heart. Now on to episode 35. Jerry Kazaya from the Auto Shop in Plano, Texas, has been in business since 1981. Plano is a northern suburb of Dallas with a population of 280,000. And according to Jerry, it is the top growing county in the U.S. His shop is large, 35,000 square feet. He has 21 lifts and has two flats per every lift. This episode, per usual, has many great takeaways and confirmations on how successful businesses run. Jerry started in his dad's business in the 1970s, and one day he had a very profound vision of what his current business looks like now. His greatest learning moment, he says, came from a picture in a trade magazine from the 1970s, and this is a really good story. Jerry gets into some very deep think on labor rates, technician pay, their company purpose, and how he made significant changes as a leader throughout the years. Jerry has a business coach, a mastermind group, and believes in mentoring. He is outspoken on many issues that face the industry today and admits that he needs to do more to market to millennials. Listen to him describe one of his most important systems he uses to keep a tight rein on his customer service. And also, listen for the moment that Jerry brings up the Albert Einstein quote about fixing problems. This episode is slightly longer than our average, but I just couldn't find much stuff to toss on the cutting room floor. You've got to experience Jerry full on. Enjoy. Here we go. Jerry, when did you know you wanted to be a business owner?
That's a great question. I will have to tell you that I grew up in my dad's auto repair business. He started his business in 1946 in the city of Detroit. And I started working with my dad literally when I was five. And when I was 12 years old, I, honest to God, I saw this shop in my mind and said, one day I'm going to make that so.
So you had a vision.
One of the things that was really interesting is my dad and I had differences of opinion. And my dad is really old school and ran his business really old school. And I said, there's got to be a better way. You know, it was really fun. After I opened my shop in 81, I went back to Detroit a few times. And in 1985, my sister was getting married. And I remember going up to my I was at my dad's shop and the phone's ringing. And I answered the phone, and I knew the show. And I looked at it, and he still had the phone that had the old dial. I said, Dad, when are you going to get a new phone system? You know, we've been using push buttons for decades. He goes, why? The damn thing works. It's like, okay. See, that was a clash.
What's the best advice you ever received?
Now, Carm, I have to tell you, that's really a loaded question. Best advice about business,
right, okay.
Best about career, right. Best about girls, best about whiskey.
Whiskey, no, really, about business.
Don't drink the cheap stuff. Always drink good booze. Life is short. Drink the good stuff first. So what you don't know, and later on we can talk about it if you like, one of my hobbies is I make wine. I go to California, I buy the grapes, and I buy the juice, and I make wine. And my buddy says, life is short, drink the good stuff first.
Well, he's right about that, and I am an animal for California cabs. Let's go back to that great question, the best business advice you've ever received.
So there's a number of answers that I have for that, Carm. The best business advice, and I don't remember which trade magazine it was, but it completely solidified my belief about running a repair shop. And it was in the early to mid 70s. It was either Chilton Motor Age or one of those types of magazines that came to the shop every month, and it showed a picture of a guy laying on a creeper underneath the car with a telephone cord strung. You could tell he's holding the phone. And it said, you can't run a business from a creeper. And at that point, things started to click for me. And I said, you know what? This has got to be run like a business. And so I got that back in the early 70s, and that was one of the biggest clashes that I had with my dad, is he still believed that he needed to be working on cars. And I said, Dad, who's running the shop? Someone has to run the shop. The shop is fine. And it's really interesting. I love my dad. He taught me many, many, many things, some things to do and some things not to do. And one of the things I learned not to do, see, my dad never could take a vacation. He could never leave the shop, because when he left the shop, people did not answer the phones. They didn't know how. They weren't trained. There was no business being taken care of if my dad was not at the shop. My wife and I took 143 days last year, and we've traveled the world just last year. We've been doing that for many years. Because I run a business today. I do not run the business from a creeper.
So that picture actually had a long, long-range effect on your world, your life.
It absolutely did. It's a great way to say it. The article was very informative. I wish today that I still had a copy of it. I don't know even how I would go about getting it, but I would frame it and put it on my office wall and say, this right here is what helped me to verify, if you will, my belief that there's a better way to run a business.
It's important that anyone who's in business themselves as their own entrepreneur reads The E-Myth by Gerber, and that basically describes what you're saying. So over all these years, Jerry, what's your biggest strength as an entrepreneur?
Is foresight. My biggest strength is knowing where my weakness is, hiring good people that are strong where I'm weak, so that we complement each other. This is not the Jerry Keziah show. This is the auto shop. We're a company. We're a corporation. We're a team. We work together. I just help facilitate things. I point people in the right direction and say, this is where we need to be headed, and here's why we need to be headed that way.
So you hire people to do what then?
I hire people to talk to my customers. I hire people to work on the vehicles. I hire people to take care of the bookwork, the taxes, the building maintenance. I'm just the biggest ringleader of the whole group. I love my employees. I think we have the best team that we've had in the 35 years of running my company. We've continued to refine, rehone, regroup, rehire. Really, really, really amazing people that can see the vision that we have. And our vision is to be the best that we can be, to take care of our customers. You know, Carm, it's really funny. We don't just fix cars. That's the service that we offer is we fix cars. But more importantly, we save people's lives. We make sure that the car stops when it's supposed to, that it goes in the direction that they want it to, that there are no issues. You know, I mean, the last thing you want to do is have a car leave your shop, find out they had a blowout, and that the driver got injured because one of our techs failed to notice that the tire was low, or that the tread was coming off, or that there was some safety issue. I can't have that happen on my watch.
So your purpose in your shop that everyone probably rallies around is that you save lives.
That is 100% our purpose. And as a byproduct, we fix cars, we take care of our customers, we have huge community involvement. We just got a phone call yesterday. I was out of the office at a training, and I found out we made the WFAA A list for the third time. So that's another pretty good thing. So WFAA is Channel 8. I think they're ABC here locally, and they put out their top people in the whole Dallas Fort Worth area, and we made it again. So congratulations to my team.
Jerry, you say you hire people to do the things that you want them to do for you, but if by any chance someone left you, what is the job that you could easily move back into?
That's a great question.
What's the job you love to do? That's my point.
The job I love to do is talk with my customers.
So you would work on the service counter then?
I would do that, man, today. I do that. When we're busy, I go up on the service counter and I write up our clients, and even when we're not busy, if I see one of our regulars, because 35 years, I still have the second client that I ever worked on, by the way, when I started my company in the driveway of my house, I still have the second client from my driveway who still comes in here. He is one of my best regulars, and he comes in, I stop what I'm doing, and we shoot the breeze, and I just check in on him, see how he's doing, what's going on with his business, and we've become very close friends, and we have a list of folks like that, so every time, that's what I do.
Amazing. Hey, can you recognize a significant change in you as a leader since you started your business?
Can I say significant? That's probably an understatement. I have gone through such dramatic and radical changes. 30 years ago, my whole concept was, I'm the boss, you're going to do it my way, because if you don't, I'm going to fire you. Times have changed. Times have completely changed, and more importantly, I've changed. Let's talk about this. Let's come up with a better way, and let's see if we can make it best for everyone. It's not just my way, because the truth of it is, I've worked for the same guy for 35 years. I have no idea how it's done anywhere else, because I've not worked for anybody else. So I need input. I need to have new ideas brought in, and my concept today, what I do, I make it better, stronger, faster, more efficient, more effective, and make everybody more money.
Jerry, are we our own worst enemy in the industry?
Of course we are. On so many levels. That's even hard to quantify, but it starts off as technicians. We are our own worst enemy.
What do you mean?
So as a shop owner, the big issue that I see is finding good qualified employees. And then when you find them, how do you keep them? Well, one of the ways that you can keep them, and it's to me the elephant in the room. I don't believe that our employees, as an industry, Carm, I don't believe that they are paid what they're worth, and I don't believe that our shop rates are anywhere close to what they should be. I think we are so undervalued and so underpaid as an industry. And unfortunately, I think that we do it to ourselves. I'll tell you a fun story. I know that the Tesla dealerships here locally charge $250 a shop rate hour. That's for brakes, that's for alignments, that's for
anything.
Where
else are you going?
Well, you can bring it to our shop. Well, we can certainly hang brakes, but that's the whole point is, Tesla's charging $250 an hour. The local dealerships, with all of the infrastructure and everything that they have, they're not getting anywhere near that. We're not able to get I wish we could get to 50 an hour. And that would put us so far out of the realm of market value, we couldn't justify that. I will say that my landscaper came out and did a job for me. His rate was $175 an hour. For my landscaper, he was there with him, another guy, a wheelbarrow, some shovels, and I'm still scratching my head over that, but I needed the job done, and I liked the guy, so I was happy to write the check at the end of the day. When you look at your technicians and you see that what you pay them on a weekly basis, and you know that it's not sufficient for the $250,000 worth of tools they have, and some guys substantially more than that, add to that the countless hours going to training camps, going to seminars, going to webinars, attending every type of training that we can go to, the skin knuckles, the bruised knees, et cetera, and look at what you're paying them per hour, and then you wonder why they do moonlighting. Well, the problem is the moonlighting technicians don't make enough money, in their opinion, in the shop, so they have to take work on the side. The customers think they're winning because they're getting a deal. See, the technicians don't even charge enough to cover their time working out of their garage.
You said it a little earlier, and I think it was a very profound statement. And last week in Detroit, I heard Donnie Cypher say this, that his prices and his labor rate are designed to build a strong and healthy business so that he doesn't go out of business. I think that's what you're really saying, is that people need to take a look deep inside, make sure that the number that they're posting and the margins that they're making are for sustainability.
Well, this is spot on. You know, most shop owners, they have very little, if any, formal training on how to run a business, and they really have no concept of how to set their labor rate other than getting on the phone and calling around the other shops to say, so what's your labor rate per hour? I've never had a customer call us in 35 years unless they've been taught how to shop. Most of them say, what does it cost to do a brake job? But they've never called to ask, how much is your labor rate? And that's the only tool that most shop owners know to make sure that they are within the market. They find out, oh, you're charging 150 coconuts an hour. I'm going to charge 100 and I'm going to get more of your business. So they continue to undermine the industry without even realizing what they're doing.
Okay, you're in a lot of groups, and I know that you've been to coaching, you do coaching, I believe you do training. When you say, you just said most shops, what do you really mean by that? I mean, 20% of the people that need support or need this kind of eye-opening?
The average shop in the United States, from what we've been able to determine, will do significantly less than $50,000 per month in service. The average shop owner, the average one that we speak to, does not take home more than $30,000 or $35,000 a year for their money.
Well, wait a minute. You say that you talk to it. So these must be the stressed shops, the shops that want to make some big changes, because on the other side of the coin, Jerry, there is a tremendous amount of very successful and well-run shops that are doing way above that.
When you look at the big picture, first of all, yes, you are correct. And those are probably the people that you are speaking with. You are talking to the top echelon in our industry.
Right.
No question about that. Those guys, man, they know how to run a business, and they are running a very effective business. Okay, the majority of the shops in the United States, they're struggling. They are really struggling, unfortunately, and they don't even know that they're struggling.
So how does a shop raise their labor rate?
Usually you go over to the computer and you click a couple buttons and you push enter.
Oh. I set myself up for that, didn't I?
it's really that simple.
I set myself up. I know it. Okay. I wanted to go deeper. I did. I basically, there's formulas out there. There's so many great Excel spreadsheets. What's a big major step that someone who's listening to the show, and we've got a ton of listeners, and especially aspiring technicians who want to run shops and shops that say, hey, I can do better. And this podcast series is really helping me out. Let's get into some brass tacks. Where can someone go to? Do they have to join a coaching group, or can they figure this out on their own?
Yes and yes. I would recommend, look, the best athletes in the world all have coaches. The first thing that someone needs to do is they need to invest in themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. Albert Einstein, globally understood as a very intelligent man. I'm going to use that as an understatement. One of his most profound statements is, you cannot fix a problem with the same mind that created the problem. You have to learn how to run a business. You have to learn how to... There are formulas, Carm, that you can use to calculate what your shop rate really should be. That was a mouthful. Let me say that again. There are formulas out there that will help you calculate what your shop labor rate should be. If you don't even know that they're out there, you can't find it. Okay? Someone has to let you know. There has to be some sort of coaching, training, peer review, something that a shop owner can gravitate towards, something that works for them, and say, listen, you really need to look at these numbers. Okay? There's a lot of shops still charging dealer list price for parts with the understanding that that's all they can get.
Yeah, the list price police. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you buy a smart car part, you make 5%. That does not cover the credit card fees.
Right.
So if you're stuck using those types of matrices, you will never be able to be successful.
It's not necessarily matrices, Jerry. It's a paradigm. It's a thought process that says this is only what I can do.
Yes. Every shop owner should have someone to speak with, and it does not even have to be in the repair industry.
Right.
Get involved in a mastermind group. Get involved in find a really good coach. Find a marketing company that knows auto repair business. I mean, there's a number of different things that someone can do, Carm, but I think that our industry really, really needs to stop stubbing its own toes and really start working together. Unfortunately, we're called independent repair shops for a reason, and most shop owners are very independent, and they want to continue to reinvent the wheel themselves every day.
Jerry, do you see any new and exciting ways to motivate and compensate your team members?
What we do is we work on bonus programs.
Okay.
So we have a flat rate system. We have some techs that are paid. We have everything from hourly plus commission, and flat rate. And then we have team bonuses for everybody. When the shop hits numbers, then we have bonuses that we provide.
Jerry, do you have a daily scrum with your team to go over previous day's accomplishments and even numbers and talk about important daily tasks?
I do that with my front team. I let my shop manager, he takes care of the back. I meet with everybody as a group once a week. Tuesday mornings, my front team, we have an open house. Anybody who wants to join us at 6 a.m., we meet at a local restaurant. I buy them breakfast so we can have a friendly chat, kind of get a direction of where things are going, especially when I'm out of town. Other than that, we do hold weekly shop meetings in addition to those. So it's not a daily thing for me for the entire company. I just don't have the time to do that. So I let my team do that.
If you stop doing them, would your people just say, hey, Jerry, we got to get back doing this because they find value in them?
I believe so. We talk about everything. We talk about books I'm reading. We talk about our goals.
What is the latest book you're reading?
It's from Clint Arthur, and it's What They Teach You at the Wharton Business School.
Ah, great school.
Yeah, so I hear.
So tell me, what describes your overall customer service culture in a word?
Honest, fair.
I'll take two.
Yeah, honest and fair. We don't pay our service advisors on commission, so there's no incentive for them to sell somebody something they do not need. And when we show a client photos or video or take them out to the vehicle, we make it as clear and concise, and you know, we pull back all the curtains and say, here, this is what we're seeing, this is what needs to be done today, this is something you can put off, and customers really appreciate that.
Do you offer any bonus or incentive for accomplishing certain training goals for your techs?
Well, we actually have training is required in our shop.
Okay.
So we have every group has we suggest that everyone get at least 30 hours of additional training per year. And then if they get more, it adds more toward pay and incentives.
Thanks. Great. Do you have a unique system that has improved any kind of workflow inside the business?
Everything we do is different.
Wow, that's a big statement.
Yeah.
Different than
really
what?
Is. Well, for example, we have a written hard copy and that the customer will sign when they bring their vehicle in. Our CSR will write the vehicle up. A lot of shops are going away from these. I use it as a management tool. For example, we have this hard copy, and it is like postcard stock.
Mm-hmm.
And then they write the time on when the vehicle comes into the shop. Then they write the time when the vehicle is dispatched. It gets time punched. We have a time clock in our parts department. So the technician hits the time clock when he puts it into the parts department. Our parts department punches the time clock when it leaves and comes up to the service advisor. The service advisor sells it. He documents in the repair order the time and date that the vehicle is sold, that the repair is sold. And then parts gets it back, and they hit the time clock when the parts are delivered to the tech. Now, it sounds like a lot of steps and a whole lot of work. But as a management tool, if I have a ticket or a job that sat in the waiting to get looked at bin for a long time, that tells me I'm short on techs. If it takes a technician a long time to get a diagnosis, and we're not talking one ticket, right? You have to look at the whole big picture.
Sure.
So you're looking at, where's the bottleneck? Is the bottleneck in my parts department? Did it take them 6 hours to get the job priced out and sent up to the service counter? If so, that means I'm short in parts. If it took my service advisor a long time, they'll make notes. Left message, left message, left message. That tells me that the guys are doing what they need to do, or do I need to add more people, right? So the whole concept of this repair order and the time clock is to completely verify wherever you'll have a bottleneck.
Well, this sounds to me like an accountability to customer service.
Well, that's the whole purpose.
Yeah. And
today's customers, they're not as loyal as they used to be. In the old days, you know, if you took care of a customer, you could guarantee they're coming back. But, you know, today's world is different. So we have to go above and beyond what the norm is.
When do you go and take a stack and slice off a dozen of these over the course of a week and take a look at them?
We actually look at them every day.
Okay.
We look at yesterday's tickets this morning. And we, every single day. And if I see, you know, there's a trend, right? You get to notice a trend. You go, we've got a bottleneck here. And then you just go to that department and say, why is it taking so long to get tickets out of parts? Well, you know, I got this, this, and this. And okay, great. We need more people or we don't. Now, I was, you know, and who knows? Maybe the guy wasn't feeling well or something. But if you can't measure it, you can't manage it.
Bingo. Do you have an incentive for new customers to try your place?
We do. We have these little cards that they look like a business card, And if I knew you were going to ask me that, I'd have one here so I could read it off to you.
Well, what's it say?
Basically, the customer can write their name, the existing customer writes their name on it and gives the card to a new client, someone who's not in our database, and both of them get $25.
It's a referral.
Yes, it's a referral system that we use. It's bona fide, and they're nice full color cards printed on the front and back, and they talk about our shop and how it's $25 to each of them. And man, it's been working great.
And every customer who leaves, even if they came in twice during the week, gets a card?
No, they get two cards. Everybody gets two cards, every ticket.
Okay, great, two cards. So you're looking for two referrals, two for the price of one, if you will.
Well, you know, if you don't ask for a referral, you'll never get
it. Well, yeah, I'm sure that one of them may not make it to the real world, so they may not lose. They may lose one, maybe not lose two.
Well, certainly not two in the same week, so then they have four. And
and your $25, is it a gift card? Is it cash?
We put it on their account.
Oh, so the next time they come in, they get $25 off.
Yes, and they can use it. They can have as many of those as they want, all at the same time. If they send me six customers, they get $150 off their next repair. And if the repair is only $100, we're keeping $50 applied to their account for the next time they're in.
Wow, great program. What percentage of your customers come in, drop the keys, and say, Jerry, fix it?
Oh, good Lord, most of them.
Really?
Most of them do. Yeah, it's really amazing how many cars are dropped off in the middle of the night. We come in every morning to quite a few envelopes. We have the drop-off in the outside the building with pens and whatnot, and they sign it and fill out their name and tell us what's wrong with it. We call them the next day and let them know what's going on.
What are you doing to market to millennials?
Nothing.
I love your answer.
I'm telling you, our marketing, we were just discussing this in our last meeting. Our marketing is primarily to our existing customers and our referral program. We do lots of marketing to our customers. We do very little, truly very little marketing for new client acquisition other than our referral program.
So, Jerry, that was a point of my question. How are you reaching out to the millennials?
The only thing that we do right now that I know for sure is we look at, we have a mobile site for our shop, which as of, I think it was April 21st, they called it Mobilegeddon. If you did not have a mobile site, Google completely wiped you off of their chart. Add to that, currently, as we sit here right now, I have 76 reviews on Google, and we have 4.6 stars. That's huge for the millennial group.
It is.
There's no other shop out there in our area that has anywhere even close to what we have as far as reviews. So this is a really big deal as far as reaching out to them. I don't understand how to do that yet. I'm working on it.
Social media.
Yeah, we have a Facebook presence. We have we have a Twitter presence. And personally, I've never been able to figure out how to make Facebook pay for its time and expense.
I understand. And one day it's just going to hit you upside the head and you'll figure it out.
I hope so, because I'm ready.
What's the biggest concern right now and or threat to your business?
Finding qualified, talented technicians. That's the biggest threat that I see to my business. The second problem that I see is making sure that the avenue is still open to get repair information from the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
They continue to try and close those doors. And it gets tighter and tighter every year.
Let's go back to your first statement about finding technicians. Are you self-growing your future ATEX?
Yes, we are. We have a lube tech that has worked for us for a while. He just became certified in ASE or with ASE. He is really working toward becoming a good technician. And we're doing what we can. We're sending him to the training. We've got our master techs that will coach him and work with him. So we're doing that. As he becomes better, we will hire another lube tech to replace him and put him on the line.
Jerry, how do you see technology impacting your business?
I think you're going to see more and more computerization in the vehicles. You're going to have more and more microprocessors. But at the end of the day, you're still going to need brakes. You're still going to need oil services. You're still going to need wheel bearings. You're still going to need tires, air conditioning, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of folks out there afraid of technology. I say that if, as long as you continue to train and train your people, you should embrace technology. I mean, look at Tesla. Their whole concept is the car is technology-based, and they're making $250 a flat rate hour. Embrace the technology. Learn what you can. Raise your labor rates. People understand that computers are expensive to work on.
Where do you see yourself personally in the next 3 to 5 years?
The next 3 to 5 years will probably be doing just about what I'm doing today, only a little differently. So I'm really ramping up my coaching business, and I would like to do more coaching and more mentoring, not only for this industry but for other industries. One of my great successes is I took a landscaper who at the time he had 3 crews. He was doing about $200,000, $250,000 a year. Today he's going to hit $3 million. Our goal is to hit him, get him at $15 million in the next 3 years. And I think next year we're going to hit $10 million. So we know there's a formula. There's a system on building a business, and it's a pretty universal formula. Once we get people to understand that it's a formula and use this system, we can help them grow their business. And I'm excited about being able to share that now that we've got it documented, and not only documented, but we've proved it across several different industries different times over.
So what's the industry going to look like in the next 10 years?
I think the industry, as long as it stops, if we can get it to stop stubbing its toes and doing silly things, we could become more of the profession that we should be. I believe that the technology is going to continue to evolve, and the consumers are going to recognize that you're driving a high-end computer and you can't fix it at Wally World.
Jerry, this has been incredibly enlightening, a very much off-structured interview. I appreciate all the great words of wisdom and things that I think will make a quality impact to our podcast series. So my last question, give us some Jerry Kazaya words to live by.
Jerry Kazaya words to live by. Always do your best. Be the best that you can be. I get up in the morning. I do about 20 to 30 minutes worth of exercise. I'm a voracious reader. I'm always learning something. Man, you can't get better if you're not learning. Always learn. Read as much as you can. Readers are leaders. We've heard that for years. Get your mind clear. Hit the ground running. Do the best you can. And when you're at work, be at work. Cut off the text messaging, cut off the Facebook, do all that stuff. That's your play. Do that when you are off of work. Play when you're playing, work when you're working. Apply yourself 100% to whatever the task is that's in front of you at that moment, and you cannot help but be successful.
Thank you so much for spending some time with me.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for allowing me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.